Hi, I'm Tara Lynn of Geek Saga Entertainment, here with my co-host Manny for the Geek Saga Show series, The Media That Made Us. This series focuses on media that the two of us consumed in our younger or maybe even just slightly younger years, media that helped shape our current interests and that we still love.
So I'm Manny, and for our ninth Media That Made Us episode, we're continuing our coverage of the reimagined Battlestar Galactica series discussing Crossroads arc, which includes BSG Season 3 episodes, well, 11 or 12, depending on where you're viewing episode numbers, through the end of the season. But just to be clear, this means we are discussing the episodes titled Take a Break from All Your Worries through the Crossroads Part 2.
Before we get started, just a heads up that you can follow me and therefore all of the Geek Saga endeavors at Geek Saga on Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube.
And you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Benissimo Art.
Just a couple of other house cleaning items before we dig in. If you're watching this as a webcast on Facebook or YouTube, pretty please make sure to hit those like and or subscribe buttons. And if you're catching the audio only version on your favorite podcatcher, we could really use some more ratings, especially on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and would super very much greatly appreciate it if you would take a moment to mark the Geek Saga podcast 5 stars wherever you're listening. Last but hopefully not least, we hope that you'll check out the Geek Saga Entertainment Patreon. We have a lot of tiers with just $3 per month, getting you the most prevalent perk of early access to podcast episodes. You can check that out at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Our format for this Media That Made Us series includes our top 5 moments that made it, basically our hot takes from the portion of the series we're covering, followed by any insights we've uncovered from rewatches and or being longtime fans. And as we get into the arc's top 5, just a warning that we'll be talking about some pretty dark, deep shit.
Yeah, to say the least, as our first top moment is She's One of the Good Ones, aka the revelation in the episode called The Woman King that the never seen before Dr. Robert is killing Sagittarons. Just to be clear, the labeling of this top 5 moment comes from a very specific conversation that is had after this revelation that this doctor has been going around murdering Sagittarons. After Dr. Robert is caught out, this, again, brand new and therefore obviously questionable character asks, who gets the medication when there's not enough to go around? The Sagittaron who won't even lift a finger to save his own race, or a Viper pilot? Then he insists that he didn't harm D, who is in fact Sagittaron and got sick in this episode. But the doctor's like, I didn't do anything to her. She's fine. And Hilo sarcastically says, right, she's one of the good ones. And just dig oof there, because that whole they're one of the good ones bullshit has always been a thing. But watching this episode now especially was fucking rough, to be honest. I do want to just rewind a bit because, like, oh my God, the frustration, even watching this the first time around, that something seriously questionable is going on. And like, as viewers, you know it too, right? I'm pretty sure I was like, yeah, there's something super fishy about this whole thing. I mean, listen, we talked about this, I think, when Deanna Beers came on the scene way back when, and we're like, brand new character. There's like no way this is gonna pan out as being just like a, oh yeah, this is a totally brand new doctor who's not doing anything wrong. Guys, fine. Everything's cool here. Go about your business. It's just, I don't know, like poor Hilo is like being the only one who sees or is like trying to acknowledge what is or might be going on. Again, like as a viewer, and especially as a lover of Hilo myself, it's like, come on, listen to him, you know?
Yeah, Hilo is, this is just one of his rebel Hilo moments. He's just such a good guy. I love Hilo so much, you know, and he just does all the good things. But yeah, he was the only person that was sane. And like, look, even when the plot didn't like unfold, obviously he was like this new doctor that came out of nowhere. I mean, there was something going on. There was something fishy for sure. Not only was it fishy, but, you know, Doc Robert, he also was in the first X-Men movie as like an asshole as well. So it's like, I already knew something was bad. I was like, oh, I know this guy from somewhere. Oh, yeah, he's probably killing those people. I guarantee it. When it comes to like real life implications with this kind of stuff, this is kind of something that has happened in, you know, society a few times. I'm not going to get deep into it, you know, but yeah, there's like weird things like that. So I thought it was cool that they just kind of had an episode like this because, you know, Ronald, he likes to throw in real animations into stuff, which I think makes it like really cool, you know. And I'm right there with you with the D.O. She's one of the good ones.
I know that with the Sagittarians, it's this whole religion thing where they don't believe in medication. And that's the biggest reason why everybody seems so frustrated with them. But also, like, the hatred seems to go a little bit deeper. I mean, and not even, I don't just mean for, obviously, with Dr. Roberts, obviously, it's a lot deeper. But it's kind of like anti-vaxxers, right? Like, you're mad about it. Y'all are the reason measles and shit is coming back. But essentially, like, this guy is trying to kill all the Sagittarians. He's not just not treating, you know, because they don't want to be treated. He's like legitimately poisoning them when they come for treatment. And I want to say, like, Doc Cottle, unfortunately, is not at his best in this episode. In a way, it's not on the level of him lying to Hilo and Sharon about Hera dying. But also, maybe it is kind of worse because he's lying about having done the autopsy, and he's lying because he's tired and he didn't feel like doing it. He admits that. And like, listen, I get it. People lie for stupid reasons, and poor Doc Cottle has had the whole freaking fleet on his back treating everybody. It's seemingly completely on his own, because who knows where Dr. Robert was all this other time before, but he's taking care of, and he's particularly taking care of, like, all the important people all this time, heads of the fleet and everything, important people is what I mean. But also, like, other people died because of this, because he lied and didn't do the autopsy when he said he did. So, like, no bueno, Doc Cottle.
It's kind of the danger of, you know, I always tell people, like, it's okay to ask questions, even if they're crazy questions. And just, so that way you can just kind of get corrected. And this was one of those situations. Hilo is being punished, and really at to the detriment of many other people, just because Hilo asked the question and Doc Cottle just didn't take it seriously in any kind of way, that he straight up lied to him just to make him go away. That was it. And that's a real world implication also right there, you know, where it's like, look, dude, if you don't know for sure, do the autopsy and just find out. So that way you can just cross it off. Well, it wasn't that, you know, or it was that.
And
you
there's
know,
not so... like a single other person on the ship who can do an autopsy, or in the fleet who could do an autopsy.
Yeah. Like, is there only two doctors? Well, one, but, you know, whatever.
I mean, obviously we don't want Dr. Robert doing it, but.
No. No. So, yeah, we have one doctor on the fleet, and, you know, he's old and he smokes. So, you know, you guys may be doctorless really soon.
Funny enough, I believe that the director of this episode and the showrunner Moore had, like, differing opinions on it being kind of a one-note episode. Because I think this is something you and I talked a little bit about in preparation for recording this. But the director kind of said that the episode isn't just about people being racist. It subtly shows, you know, the bad things that can happen when good men don't speak up. People can die. But I don't know how much I agree with that, because Hilo does speak up. He tries to speak up over and over and over again. Like, he's getting himself in trouble, getting yelled at, having fist fights with Ty because nobody's listening to him. And Moore, on the other hand, said this episode doesn't say anything new. It just says that racism is bad, which it is. But also, I guess he didn't really love how Ty and Tyrell's animosity toward the Sagittarians kind of came out of nowhere. And people kind of made comments about the Sagittarians under their breath this whole series. But in this, like, whoa, they're basically barely above Cylons in the pecking order of who people don't like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how bad is it really, guys? Come on. Okay, they believe something different. Let's face facts. They had their own colony, and they weren't anywhere near you until this. And now we have to live in the same fleet now, you know, but...
Also, like, I, as a Sagittarius myself, I have to know, what did these writers and showrunners have against people who are Sagittarius? Sagittarius?
Someone came out of a bad relationship is what
happened. Yeah, someone really hates people born between November 21st and December 21st or whatever. The whole episode is all about being othered and the judgment that rises against them because they have these different beliefs. And it is, it's not the best episode, don't get me wrong, not by any means, but as one-off episodes go, it at least has a point, I think. Like, listen, it's at least it's not the Black Market episode.
That is probably the worst episode of the whole series.
I think everybody who loves this series is in agreement with that, honestly.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I think that the episode does a good job on just kind of portraying that people hate other people just because of something that they believe in that's, like, a little off, or they're not taken seriously or deemed as any type of worthy of anything or having an opinion, or, hey, maybe I'm just don't want to. No. It's because they believe this, and then they just got fucking treat them like shit. Thank God we have fucking Hilo there to fucking set the record straight, because he's just a good guy. He's just a good man. And he's like, look, I'm just fair. You know, he's trying to just, I don't know.
And also smart enough to, like, see that something's not right, too.
Yeah, exactly.
But maybe he's just on edge from being kind of pushed aside himself.
Oh, yeah.
That's not the only, oh, this is maybe too real top five moment we have to talk about.
Yeah. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Collective Bargaining 101, or the episode Dirty Hands, being a political polemic Moore always said this show wouldn't be. This was a good episode, but I'm not going to lie. It was pretty generic. I know what they were trying to do. I feel like in one of two camps. I feel like they were trying to explore this kind of dichotomy between the have and have nots, right? Because the only people we ever see are like on the Galactica. We don't see where's the fuel coming from, who's making this kind of stuff. So now you have this like coal mining operation on these other ships, and they're working 16-hour days, and they're working 7 days a week and all this kind of stuff just so the fleet can like stay alive. But on the other side of it, I felt like the episode is probably more about the chief than anything else. Because when we see him on New Caprica and he's doing the strike, he was very passionate and very angry. And in this one, he was just kind of like, and he just walks up quietly to the thing and just turns it off. And he's like, yeah, guys, we're striking. And I feel like when you do things out of anger, it's like you're being run by like emotion. But when you do things like the way the chief did here, I feel like it's almost taken more seriously because he's in a calm state. He's not trying to start shit. He's trying to like make a point.
I think that the juxtaposition of this episode so close to the Tyrell is a Cylon reveal, more on that later, is really good. I mean, what is it, like 4 or 5 episodes apart? You know, it's a good number of episodes, but it's not like seasons, right? And I think that they placed this one nicely for that reason. And of course, it only really makes sense coming after New Caprica because Chief was the head of the union there. So yeah, I like the timing of it. I think they did a good job with that. And I think they tossed around this one being placed earlier too, and I'm glad they didn't.
No, I'm glad they didn't. Because the chief had really been walking around just kind of like alone, stuck in his own head, just kind of going through the motions. When you see him in any scenes kind of like building up to this, it's almost like he doesn't have any purpose.
Other than his job.
Other than his job, right? So that's all he's doing. He's just like, oh, okay, doing this, going to pull this Viper apart, do this, you know, whatever. But it was nice to see this kind of being almost like a turning point for him, where he's getting more like, I don't know what's the correct word, like justified almost. And like, I can't think of a right word for it, but I don't know. I feel like he's becoming more of like a poignant person at this point. Like now it's like, okay, here's the chief's beliefs. Here's what he's doing. And then what it builds into later on, I think it was fantastic. And you're right. And the way it was placed in the season was good. It was definitely a good buildup.
Let's be real. This episode, along with what went on in The Woman King, this one's also hitting real hard right now of all times. This idea of essentially keeping people in their place. And this is a little more heavy-handed on the like inherited jobs and careers sort of thing. But how all of that pertains to what are essentially the lower classes. And in this case, it's more about the colony that they're from. But you see the point they're trying to make. And again, like, especially right now, that the whole idea of keeping these lower level colony survivors in their place in these, I mean, not just like menial jobs. These are very necessary jobs, but they're dangerous. You know, we know that the Viper pilots are working overtime. We know that the deckhands are working overtime, just like the people on this Tilium ship are. But it's still not quite like, yes, the Viper pilots are in danger too. But I don't know. There's a difference between going out there and actually like fighting and feeling like you're just a cog in the machine, I think.
That's a really good point because, the Viper pilots do fight, but they really get to kind of relax sometimes also. Right. And then you have these people in the mines that they're working 7 days a week and they had what, like 12-year-olds in there, you know, and they're doing this kind of stuff. And you have to be careful with that, because when you're in a position to where the fleet is, you're justifying modern day slavery for survival.
Yeah.
Is what it is. But really, that's the justification that the people up here make. Well, they're like, well, we got to survive. So they have to sacrifice.
And then it becomes that lottery system thing. And this poor kid who worked for like a summer on a farm and probably never handled actual farm machinery. He was probably mucking stalls and, I don't know, milking cows or something. And they're like, oh, well, now you got to be a heavy machinist. Go have fun. Be safe. Don't lose a limb or anything. I'm a little bit torn. Like, how do you feel about when Chief shuts down the operation and says we're on strike? How do you feel about Adama and Roslyn's reaction to it? Because even now, I had kind of forgotten that Adama legit threatens to shoot Callie because the deckhands go on strike in solidarity, right? And it's like, I had forgotten that Adama straight up threatened to murder a mother who is like also part of his crew and Tyrell's wife. I'd forgotten about it's a lot for our admiral, honestly.
I think it was really extreme for what he was trying to do. Because in the end, it's like, well, what are you going to do? Like, because part of me would have been like, okay, shoot my wife, Admiral Kane.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead. And look what happened to her and her people. I mean, let's face facts. How many people from the Pegasus are still around at this point? Right? Oh, not God. Many.
Do so we even it's know like, who?
I don't even know who anymore, you know? But yeah, sure. Like, if you want to play it with like a heavy hand, go ahead. But the people are always going to resent you for it. And one day in that time of calm, you may find yourself getting thrown out of an airlock. Because people don't forget stuff like that. I understand what he was doing, and I understand what the president was doing, because they're scared. We have to get this stuff going. But it's like, guys, this would be really easy if you guys just sat down and talked for like 10 minutes. You can probably figure out a solution, or at least some, okay, let's start working for this, but let's get everything up and going. So that way we're not stranded out here, as opposed to coming with this like heavy hand.
Well, I mean, and the thing about it too, is they come in with this insanely heavy hand. And then as soon as everything's turned back on, they're like, by the way, we're giving into like all of your demands.
Yeah.
The majority of them. So it's like, I understand the importance of timing, like you said, and like, we need to get the ship back up and running immediately. We don't have time to go through weeks or months of negotiations. And also, of course, a lot of it's for the drama of a TV show and whatnot, but it's still like, really? Okay, good. Good that they gave into so much of the stuff, but also, I don't know.
It was very unclimactic the way it ended.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh, by the way, yeah, we'll give you whatever you want. It's like, why didn't you do that instead of threatening my wife? I don't understand what you were trying to do, you know?
It was just a power play, honestly. Like, they had to make sure everybody still knew that they were in charge, which kind of also then takes away from them. It's like, oh, we gave into a lot of your demands, but there's always that we can always take them back. Don't forget. So,
which really falls perfectly into the episode, doesn't it? Right. Because the episode is all about that. It's all about the have and have nots.
Well, on a somewhat lighter note, our next top moment is Baltar getting off. We discussed a more crude version of that in our last episode, but this time around, we are talking about him being found not guilty of treason and crimes against humanity in Crossroads Part 2. This was, I mean, obviously the build up to his trial, it took a few episodes, and his trial itself was spread across the two-part season finale, but it involved so much. I mean, we get Lee suddenly becoming a lawyer and also going against Adama, and he might not like Baltar at all, but he's still fighting for him to get this fair trial and putting his opinion and everything out there, being a good lawyer for the man of the people, Baltar over here. I don't remember being surprised that Baltar was found not guilty.
I was when I watched it.
Really?
I was, because I really felt that I knew it was a two-part season ender at the time. And I think that it's not that the show was like uncertain, but I did know that, I think it was like Ronald Moore who had mentioned a few times that he was writing himself into a corner, right? Which is why the show kind of ended at four seasons as opposed to making more, because he's like, I just wrote myself into a corner, anything beyond that. So I was kind of anticipating almost like, okay, they're going to kill Baltar in the first episode, and then in the second episode they're going to find Earth. That's just kind of what I was figuring happened. So the fact that like Baltar got off, and I was one of these people that was very much like, throw Baltar out of the airlock, fuck him, because of his fucking pussy ass shit or whatever, and he couldn't fucking like stand up for, you know, for the colonies and all this kind of stuff in New Caprica. But when Apollo gets up there and makes the entire case for him, God, I felt terrible. I was like, wow, I'm just one of those people, you know, with the mob, and they just want to burn the person. And yeah, when you really sit back and think about it, you're like, wow, like what other outcome could have there been for anybody? I mean, everybody's all about self-preservation. That's just what Baltar was doing. And it's like Apollo said, but because we don't like you, you have to go. And all the guilt and all the shame, we're hoping that it's just going to go right out there with you. But no, it was cool. And I loved the fact that the Admiral was one of the people who voted to get him off. Mm. And when he's sitting there looking at the president and he's like, no one's asking anyone to forget or forgive, but we have to look to the future. I was like, yeah, that's awesome, dude. Perfect scene.
I'm almost wondering, you know, because it's been so long since I first watched the episode. It's like, there's this part of me that's like, I kind of always assumed that he was going to be found not guilty. But I think back then, and honestly, even more so today, I just have this mindset of like, my God, karma's these people who most deserve it, they're never going to get their karma. Mm-hmm. Look at where we are in the world right now. You know, look at who our fucking president is. I look at some of the situations I've been dealing with sort of professionally and sort of personally the past few years, and like watching this person treat everybody around them like total shit and like just get away with it somehow. Like there's no comeuppance. there's just that kind of pessimistic part of me that's like, he may have deserved it, but he was never going to get it. So
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I don't think I was ever really super surprised that they found him not guilty. And I, some of that even more so back then may have been like, I couldn't imagine the show without Baltar, even though they give Six a different story for most of season four with Ty. We didn't know that was coming. So I was just like, what am I going to do with Six? You know, like if they get rid of Baltar, and then also like, who's going to be, because Zarek was kind of pushed down the ladder, all the rungs, you know, because of the tribunal, the secret tribunal thing. So he's kind of not powerful enough right now to be up against Roslyn. So like without Baltar, you know, she's just got like full reign, and not entirely against that, but
it's true, you know. But I did like the way that trial ended, right? When he's talking to his lawyer and the other guy, and he's like, oh no, you know, we gotta do a book deal and and all this stuff. And they're just like, no, we're done. You figure it out. And it's like, where am I going to live? And they're just like, well, I don't know. It kind of sounds like your problem, not mine. You know?
Like, the lawyer that sort of comes and goes, he's an interesting character with his weird little sunglasses and his cat. I mean, I like that he had a cat.
I like that he had a cat. I like that he walked with a cane and then put it down at the end and like walked away. Look, there's something that is so sleazy about him, but he kind of always plays a character like that. When you see this actor, he does a lot. He's a great actor. He's fantastic. I love watching him. But he had that smugness. I don't know. There was something sleazy about him, but he was definitely like the kind of lawyer you would want if you're in trouble. You
know? Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I might have seen like a theory way back in the day that he wasn't even like real or something. But I was like, but he got like bombed. He was in a hospital bed, like actually injured. Like it wasn't as if he just sort of flitted in and out in this sort of like non-tangible way. Like, yes, he's there and you can touch him, but once he gets injured by the bomb and is in the hospital bed for a while, it's like, okay, I like the idea of this theory, but I don't see how it's at all plausible. Although again, like Dr. Robert, we never saw him before, and do we ever see him again? I can't 100%
I don't think so.
I think he was 95% sure we don't ever see him again. I think we can move on to our number four.
Starbuck's explosive death and magical return, which spans the end of Maelstrom to the end of Crossroads Part 2. When I watched this, I really didn't think it was going to go there with what they did. But they did it, and it was really good because it was like, it was in that episode, the first season, where she crash lands on that planet, you know, and then she steals the Cylon Raider later or whatever. There's like a really cool scene where it just focuses on her face and she's getting kind of thrown around, and you can see the background behind her just kind of rolling around as she's just falling. And there's something about Katie Sackhoff that she just looks so good in a helmet and in a cockpit that it just like, there's something about it that is just like great. So when you see her in there, and when she follows the Cylon into that gas storm and you see it, it's what she was drawing when she was younger. It's in the temple. Patrick would have loved it because it was just like a total buildup of prophetic stuff. So it was great. But that explosion scene I thought was fantastic. I was like, that is so cool because you get to see it kind of happening like for real. And it wasn't like the ship exploded. It was like it fucking imploded. And with the ship on fire and you know she's in there and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's just like, no, just let me go. It's okay. And all this stuff. And it was heart-wrenching. I mean, I knew she wasn't going to be gone forever, but it was heart-wrenching.
I didn't know that. And I think because like I love Starbuck so much that when it happened, I was like, No. Like there's this part of me that's like, no, it can't be real. But then there's this other part of me that's like, oh my God, of course it's going to be real. This would happen, you know, to my, I guess, second favorite character, slightly behind Hilo. Well, and also the reactions to her death, like Adama's specifically, was so visceral. I mean, he destroys his model ship that we've seen him working on since the miniseries, I think, really.
Yeah.
But definitely since season one. Yeah, heart-wrenching. Yeah. Heart-wrenching as a viewer for a character that you've fallen in love with, but then watching, even though they're not real people, it felt real in that moment. Even watching it now, like having seen it four or five times before, I feel myself getting choked up. And it's like, don't cry over this, Tara. Come on, you've seen this before. You know she comes back in two episodes.
No, it still hurts, though. It still hurts to watch. But I loved it. I thought it was just, I don't know, it was very cinematic. I loved it.
I was surprised she came back so soon. That's one of those things, you know, that if this show was being made today, I would bet that there's at least like a 90% chance that they would have pushed that return off until the beginning of season four. And of course, we get another cliffhanger as well, but they would double down on it if it was airing now, I think, particularly if it was a streaming series. Ugh, the half seasons would be 2 years apart. And
Oh, man.
But did she come back sooner than you expected? Or was did you kind of feel
like I was kind of expecting her to come back. The way she comes back was fantastic. I loved the way she came back, because Adama's out there, he's in his ship, they just let him go. He's like, oh, I'm not part of the Colonial Fleet anymore. And then he's sitting in the tube like, yeah, come on, throw me out there. He goes out there, and there's like two really good angles. I've always liked Battlestar so much because of their camera usage that they use when during ship scenes and all this kind of stuff. It's always been very creative and very cool. So when he's sitting there and he's trying to look around, and there's just like the nebula behind him, so it's really bright. And you just see the outline of another ship kind of like hover right behind him real quick. And you can see it's an old Viper, right? So I was like, the heck? And then it does it again when it's like, it shows his backside. And all you see is the other one come right behind him. And you can see it's the old. I was like, what the hell? And he's looking around. And then all of a sudden, she's like there. I was like, dude, nice. I knew she was going to come back. But why? Right? Like, that was the big question. But why and how? Now I'm confused. But good to have you back. Your chair is still warm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, no, I agree that the angles and the way they played that was really cool. And actually, this is something I meant to ask you in our chat, but since I'm here and I forgot, when they say who's in Viper number whatever, are they asking that about Lee, or do they see? Because I wasn't sure. Like, are they, of course, knowing that she's coming back, I'm thinking, wait, did they ask that about Lee because he hasn't been in a Viper in a while? Or did they ask that about this blip that they can tell is a Viper because it's still like on their systems and everything that has just appeared also? Because she's already out there as they're launching. She's right there as soon as they steady out, basically.
You know what? You could be right. That's actually interesting. I think the reason I didn't think that is because that scene where Hilo says that is immediately after Lee takes off, I think. So I just associated it as that.
Yeah, I mean, but, same.
You could be right. Yeah, but you could totally be right. It could have been.
I think you're probably right that it was about Lee, but really, I imagine her ship is coming up on their system again anyway, because it's still one of their ships and it still works and she's still able to talk to Lee over the comms. So.
But then wouldn't it be, why are there two Viper 3s? I don't think they call the Viper like the number by like what the actual ship is, but where it's launching from or something,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So they would have said, why is there two of them?
Yeah.
Or it would have been like, why is there a Viper 3? We just lost that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Out of all of our top fives, this is the one that we're tearing apart right now.
Yeah, I know. This is the weird. We're not even tearing apart the top five. We're just tearing apart whether or not like throwaway line was about. Like, I guess who cares? But this is what happens when you're watching, you know, a handful of episodes from a show that you've watched a billion times and you pick up on things that you didn't pick up on before.
It was really cool. Okay, so one of the coolest things like that I loved was the exact way it ended. He's flying next to her and she's just like, I've been to Earth and I'm going to take us there. And it's got the song playing, you know, it's got All Along the Watchtower, but the Battlestar version. So it's like this weird, ominous kind of version of this song. You know, I've heard that song covered so many times. And I've never liked any of them, but like this one was so good. It's dark. And the way it just kind of pans away from the ship and it pans all the way out of the galaxy and it like flips and then it zooms in again and it shows you Earth. And you're just like, oh my God, they're right there. They're like a few blocks away.
Google Maps is telling you to turn right at the next nebula.
Exactly. But that was a great cliffhanger ending, I guess, you know, that they showed Earth and you're just like, okay, so Earth does exist.
Yeah.
Right. And there it is. And they're almost there. You know?
Yeah. And Starbuck knows now because died and came back.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that might be how the episode ends, but we had to close out our top five with a different moment because finally we reveal the fifth of our final top five moments from BSG season three. The fact that all of the weirdness a certain four characters began experiencing in Crossroads Part One all comes to a head in Crossroads Part Two with the reveal Sadly, not all five. And that's why I tossed around whether this should be number four or number five of our top moments. But whatever. Sadly, not all five, but four of the final five Cylons that we've been hearing about all this time and had no idea who they might be. And then it's like, bam, here you go. Let's have these four characters be going kind of crazy, hearing this song all around the ship for two episodes, basically. And then they all come together in a room and it's Tyrell, Ty, Anders, and Tori. Gotta be honest, they missed out with not having a fourth T name here.
Yeah.
Anders is really kind of like, he's like the wrong crayon in the box, you know? Like,
exactly.
And I know Tori is her first name and the other two are their last names, but still. Tyrell, Ty, Tori, and Anders.
No, not Anders. Tommy, that guy cleaning the window. Come on. You're the last one.
It's like Steven used Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl, and Steven. Like, yeah. It's like the three, you know, gems, and then this kid.
Yep. Yep. It was good, you know, and it was such a great, again, you can hear it's the song, and it's weird because they're playing it with the sitar, you know, so it's like it has this weird sound to it, like that Indian sound to it, you know, and it's fantastic. I mean, I love it. And the one who's really going crazy with it is like Ty, right? Because he's the one who freaks out in the courtroom. He's the one who's listening to the bulkheads, you know? Everyone else is just kind of like,
it's in the ship.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But that was a great buildup. They all come together at last, you know? And the only person who's just kind of like, is like the chief. Shit.
Yeah.
You know? Like Ty's like, deadbolt that door. Anders is like, you guys get away from me. And the chief is just like, yeah, whatever. Hey guys, yeah, we're Cylons. We've always been from the beginning. So.
And like,
he's a man who just accepts what he sees.
Yeah, it's a very interesting cast of characters that they chose to. Anders, who was a freedom fighter, stuck on Caprica all that time, fighting against Cylons, blowing them up, etc. And Ty, Ty's been around for fucking ever. He was around when Adama was young. What was he doing before that? And then Chief maybe the Blackbird should have been assigned. I don't know if they knew that early on though, that these were going to be the four. I think they kind of chose them, like, if I remember, kind of last minute almost.
Yeah. The very concept of the final four is kind of weird, which we'll dive into more season four and stuff. But yeah, I really feel like they just drew their names out of a hat is what they did. It was just kind of like, oh, let's see who winds up being one. But I don't know. Ty would kind of make sense, right? Because it makes the story good for season four. And the chief, I mean, Anders to me, look, I like Anders, but he's the one
that makes the most sense because he was the one we knew nothing about really for the longest time.
Exactly. To me, I think the biggerness of it really was between Ty and the chief. They've been there from the beginning.
Yeah.
Tori and Anders just came on later. I really didn't like, I like Anders' character. I think he's a cool guy. Like, definitely somebody I would have hung out with. But in the sense of development, I really didn't care about his character. You know, I was like, I was like, oh, you're a Cylon? Okay, sure. Why not? Whatever.
Yeah, and Tori was just kind of like, all right.
But it does play into like a bigger thing, though. It was cool that, like, I'm really happy that it wasn't the Admiral. I'm happy that it wasn't Baltar. I'm happy that it wasn't these other people, you know, whatever. But
I couldn't tell you who it should be other than, because you're right. I think Chief and Ty make the most sense. I think Anders is kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. Tori is the one that I'm the most up in the air about, but that's just because she's close to Roslyn. That's the one that seems a little bit shoehorned in because it's like Ty makes sense because he does. It just makes sense. And I feel like they felt they had to have someone close to Roslyn be one too. So like, okay, let's make Tori one. And maybe that's not how it happened, but that's kind of how it feels to me. It's like, oh, well, if someone close to Adama is, then we have to make someone close to Roslyn one too. Do you really need them? Do you really need Cylons infiltrating both sides of your essentially government?
Yeah, right. No, exactly. You know? So when you really think about it, Anders is the one who really makes zero sense, right? Because if that's what it was, because everybody is in a position of power or next to a position of power. So you have Ty, who's right next to the Admiral, Tori, who's next to the President, and then the Chief, who's really responsible for the entire fleet, pretty much, Viper fleet and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Anders is just like, okay, I'm going to go back to my rack now. What do I do here? You know?
Yeah, and he does it at this moment in time. Starbuck is gone. So
they should have given it to fucking Hot Dog or something, you know? Like,
oh my God. That would be a fun poll. If you could have replaced one of the final four, don't even ask which one you would replace. Just let's say one of the final four wasn't one of them. whoever you want it to be, Tori, Anders, Shoot Even Tire, or Chief, I don't care. But if you could replace one of them with a random character for like ultimate chaos or just to be funny or whatever, who would it be? And I mean, Hot Dog would be funny.
I honestly, my vote would be to get rid of Anders and put Hot Dog in there. And because I can see Hot Dog's reaction, right? Do y'all remember when like the Exodus was happening, you know, and they're in the Galactica's falling like a rock out of the atmosphere. And he just like, oh, well, this is different. I can imagine having that same kind of response, like walking in and being like, huh, wow. I guess we're Cylons. You know, like, you just so be like, oh, goofy. Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit, man. I wasn't expecting that. Well,
and I could see cards Ty, or something. You know, I could see Ty just looking at him like, hot dog, you know?
Also, like his name.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And of course, like you said, there's so much more to go into about not just the four, but the final five when that's revealed in season four. But I am glad we at least got like the Starbuck thing and like the Earth pan out, switch around.
I thought that was cool because everything that season ended so chaotic. They're getting ready to fight. We got the final four going on here. You know, everybody's like, oh my God, what is this? We got to go pretend to be people again, I guess, after they found out Dobert Cylons and Starbuck shows up out of nowhere and it's like, dude, what the hell?
Yeah.
And it's like you kind of forget what you're watching for a minute, and then they're like, they show Earth in the end, you're like, oh, that's what we're doing, I forgot. Okay, it's like when you're driving, you know, and you see something really weird on the street, you're just like, where the hell was I going? Like, oh yeah, Earth. Oh, that's where we're going.
Like, you're so thrown by the fact that the whole final five Cylons thing wasn't just a thing that was going to be dangled in front of you literally forever and maybe left as a complete mystery in the end. You know, in case of a spinoff or some bullshit, that again, that's what would happen these days, but no,
that's would be this day. Yeah,
thankfully we find out all four of them all at once. Also them meeting up in that room where they're all like just facing each other,
it was awesome.
John Travolta, like,
yeah, hot dog, you know, like, it's like a lower rank military guy there because you got Ty who's up here, you got the chief that he's part of his own thing, and then there's like hot dog, and he's like, dude, you're a nugget, like what are you, why are you even a Cylon, dude?
Why, how, what,
how, you know?
Why is hot dog?
Exactly, why is hot dog?
Oh my God,
hot dog, man. I don't care, man. I like hot dog.
He's minor comedic relief, and that's why it's hilarious to think about him being before. Now we're going to talk about some insights we've gleaned from being longtime fans. As a reminder, while we're covering Battlestar Galactica specifically, I am going to refer to Easter eggs, bloopers, and other things that I mention as Dean sites because my partner Dean knows far more about the series than I ever could. And he is always pointing things out to me. So I long ago lost track of what I knew before I knew him. And on that note, what's our first Dean site, Manny?
First Dean site is we actually have two Apollo-centric things to talk about. The first being that the episode, Taking a Break from All Your Worries, was originally contrived to be this episode where Apollo worked to create a replacement Cloud Nine, opening either as a casino or a resort ship, which, LOL, what? Apparently, this storyline was inspired by both the character in Catch-22 and by an episode of MASH, but still.
Yeah, I never watched MASH. It's a little before my time, but...
I watched it, yeah. It's older than me, but my dad used to watch it, so as a kid I used to watch it with him.
I don't know if you've ever read Catch 22. I've only read it once and it was a long time ago, but the guy, he's like the head of the supply chain or something. His name is like Miles, I don't know how to pronounce it, Minderbinder, I don't know. It's a stupid name. I mean, either way, yeah, I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah.
Baby Dama becoming like some sort of casino mogul.
And they could have given us Black Market Part 2, you know?
Okay. Well, I mean, there is that, I guess. Would people still hate Black Market as much if Apollo had opened a casino or resort ship and had his own Black Market issues all over again, huh?
Exactly.
Well, that whole dumped plot is especially amusing to me, considering that not only did Apollo not become some sort of casino or resort mogul, but he later turns lawyer. So it's still like a, well, it's like you know, let's just throw things at Apollo and see what sticks. And in this case, it was lawyer. So Ronald Moore admitted that Lee's sudden interest in the law is probably awkward, because it does. It comes kind of out of nowhere. But Moore also said that, oh, like, you have to allow a TV show to invent things about characters as they develop. And he believed that this particular change paid off really well. And I don't disagree with that. I think that Apollo's foray into the law paid off really well. But yeah, it did seem just like all of a sudden it's like, oh, Lee needs a hobby. What's it gonna be? Yep. Law codes and shit. Did he even take the bar? How could he practice law?
Yeah, guys, you know, if we're gonna be all about the law like you guys are doing, and he deserves a trial, doesn't he deserve a lawyer? You know, and you're not one.
And also Baltar has a lawyer already, but Lee ends up having to take up much of the case because of the bombing and everything. So yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I agree that the lawyer thing for Apollo did pay off well, but it was a bit of an abrupt about face for this new hobby of his.
but at least the hobby made sense, right? Because he's like, you know, he's a pilot and he's dignified and stuff. So it would make sense. It's like, yeah, from going from that to lawyer makes more sense than from going to that to black market part two.
Yeah.
So. I think that is less of a stretch.
I agree. He would have to find some spiffy suits somewhere, and I can't picture it, honestly.
Oh, I can picture him in like the purple suit with like the mustard yellow like shirt with the big rings on his fingers and stuff. Okay, so those are the two things we're changing. He builds the casino, and hot dog is one of the final four, There we go. We're going to rewrite this.
All right, what's our next Dean site?
So apparently Kat was supposed to make a brief reappearance in Maelstrom, showing up in a brand new Viper just before Starbuck dies to tell her not to worry.
Which is, I'm glad, like, literally, they gave that to Starbuck, essentially. It would have been really like heavy-handed to have Kat come back to do that.
Yeah,
like,
because Kat was just a thorn in her side. And if they did try to do the same scene at the end, you know, in Crossroads Part 2 to mimic that scene, if they did put the scene in, it would have made that latter scene like not as good and not as
popular. Yeah, exactly. Also, apparently Lee and Anders were supposed to get in a fight in the wake of Starbuck's death, but Moore felt this was too expected, which, yeah, I'm really glad they didn't do that. Too expected, or just also like...
It's just cliche. It's like two guys are gonna, we're gonna box it out now because we both love this girl. It's like,
Well, and it's also stupid because, like, why? Because Kara, even though she wasn't divorced, her and Anders were separated. So, what would be the impetus behind one of them starting to throw fists, you know?
Yeah. Last Dean site. Although there is a plot line in the original BSG in which Starbuck dies and is brought back to life by a race of godlike aliens, Moore apparently had to be reminded that this happened and then said it wasn't something that came up when they killed and subsequently brought back Kara. He specifically stated it never came up and had no bearing on the episode.
Which I think is kind of interesting. Like, really? You didn't remember that at all? And you happened to kind of do a very, very similar thing? I mean, I'm not calling him out on it because it's not the exact same, but it's interesting that when he was being interviewed about it, he was like, oh yeah, I guess that was a thing, wasn't it? No, we didn't think about that at all.
Yeah, I didn't even see that episode. I don't know what you're talking about. And then as he's saying that, you know, you hear the song in the background, you know. You know, like, wait a minute. This has all happened before and it's going to happen again.
Okay. On to our personal insights. The torture stuff with Baltar again. That's my first one. I'm so over it. I get that based on when this episode aired, it was supposed to reflect what was going on probably going on at Guantanamo Bay. And the drug stuff, of course, was reflecting the CIA's experimentation with LSD torture. But I don't know. I hate it. And no matter how frustrating or annoying or maddening we find Baltar, can we please just stop with the torture scenes? Especially with him in two episodes that it's like, oh, let's watch him be tortured by the Cylons forever. And then it's like, oh, let's watch him an entire episode of him being tortured by the people.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit much. And again, this is one of those things that it's like you could have just implied it and then just we didn't have to spend time with that.
They really wanted to show Baltar on LSD.
Yeah, exactly. They just want him to be tripping balls and being like, here you go, you're in the water now. So for one of mine, I couldn't find the original article, but I had read that Ronald Moore was trying to incorporate All Along the Watchtower into a Star Trek Next Generation episode, or it was a Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode. And it was supposed to be under some kind of weird context like that, and the same thing where people started hearing it in the ship for some reason. I don't know how that was ever supposed to conclude, but I thought that was interesting that I couldn't find the original article. I was trying to find it, but I remember reading it just to see what the context of it was, like what the episode was supposed to be about. But it was supposed to incorporate that. So I thought it was interesting that he finally got to do it, you know, years later on this show.
I'll have to look it up after the fact, because there is that part of me that's wondering why that song. Of course, I love the song and whatever, but and the choice, and it works really well in Battlestar, especially Bear McCreary's version of it. But yeah, it does make me wonder, like, huh, why with Ronald Moore in that song if he was working into another show before?
I've always said this for a long time. It's that anytime you hear that song in a movie, you know something is about to go down. Always. Mm-hmm. Anytime that has shown up in any type of media or like movie or television show, we all know shit was about to get real. So I love the fact that this is just following with that tradition.
Yeah.
Of like, okay, because even, you know, season four, when you start really hearing the song, or the end of season three, and then in season four, we all know, like, okay, some shit's going to be fucking happening. Like, it's perfect. It goes with the tradition of it.
Okay, so a little bit on a sad note here. Starbuck and Apollo at the memorial wall. Again, I was choked up. This is before, you know, she dies, obviously. But just watching these two best friends, even though they both have spouses, but they're best friends and they've known each other forever. And she's basically part of the Adama family, et cetera, et cetera. And they're talking about where they want their pictures to go. And oh God, Starbuck next to Kat, which is whatever, fine. Like as we've discussed, Kat was a thorn in Starbuck's side, and vice versa. They were kind of rivals in life, but I mean, I get it. If Anders isn't there and Lee isn't there, then sure, you know, put her up next to this other really great Viper pilot. And then Lee, I can't remember the name, but he wants to go next to the redheaded guy who he was the bomber, the suicide bomber in On New Caprica, right? Duck.
Oh, yeah.
I just remember that. It just came in my head. So Lee apparently wants to be next to them, which again is like, I guess because there's like, these are the people who are up there now. And I understand, you know, he's like, you know, they died heroes or whatever, but it's still like, oh, okay. Kat died recently. Let's give poor Duck, who we hardly knew ye, a little nod.
Like, let's not forget that you guys kind of conned him into just blowing himself up.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Well, to be fair, Apollo was not part of that. He was up in the galactic.
No. Yeah. He wasn't. But then again, it's like, then why would you want to be next to him? Here's the next insight for you. It's not so much insightful as much as just a thought in my head. Does anyone else find a little difficult to feel anything for Callie's character in the rewatch after everything that this actress was doing semi-recently? I mean, I get the art of like separating the art from the artist, but I'm probably not as intellectual as I like to think I am, and I definitely had a little bit of a hard time
with it. I'll be honest, Callie annoyed me when I like watched the series originally, so also knowing that the actress, I'm blanking on what her name is, but it's just knowing that I watched half the documentary, but I had to step away from it because it was getting just really repetitive, and it's like no new information. And then there were some people, including maybe possibly this person, who didn't seem to feel any like remorse for their part in the cult, which, so yeah, that's definitely adding to my, like, I never really, like, Callie always kind of annoyed me feeling. Yeah. So my last, it's probably less an insight and more a question, but did we really need the backstory stuff about Carol Ann Adama?
Me.
Yes,
me,
sir. I pick you.
Okay. No, we didn't need that at all. Again, it was something that you could have implied for 5 minutes instead of spending an entire episode doing it. I'm going to say no, we didn't need it.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I don't feel like it really added all that much. I think there was like an interview with Moore, or maybe the episode director, who said that what they were trying for was like to show some of why Apollo and Adama are kind of at odds with each other, why there's some kind of distance and maybe not always, you know, lovey-dovey family feelings there. But it's like, before this episode aired, I always put that to that Adama was gone for most of Apollo's childhood. Even once they're spending more time together, now he's his boss. So, like, of course there's going to be, maybe if not harsh feelings, but some distance and, like, whatever there. And then, of course, there's this whole, like, well, he's at Admiral Adama, and Apollo is constantly feeling the need to prove himself, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Even if Adama isn't necessarily asking for it, which he kind of is a lot of the time. So there was nothing about this backstory that I think added to either one of their characters or to their relationship. And it just, I didn't like it.
I get doing the flashbacks where you can see that like Adama's a little more of like a tortured soul, I guess. But if he was the one that was gone all the time and like all this stuff, I don't know. I think it just kind of falls flat. It was too much to have that for an entire episode, pretty much. I didn't like it.
Oh, and also, you know, you mentioned that to have this like one episode that's like entirely centered on this sort of odd relationship flashback stuff. But this episode was called A Day in the Life. Mm-hmm. And it also featured the Tyrell Cali thing where they get stuck in the airlock. And the Tyrell Cali thing was supposed to be the B plot. And even Moore, I think, admitted that the B plot was like more effective and interesting than this whole like A plot of Adama having flashbacks about his wife. Yeah. And I agree. And also calling the episode A Day in the title doesn't really fit to me at all. Because if Adama's only thinking about his ex now dead wife one day out of the year, how is that? That's not an every day in the life, which is is supposed to connotate.
If they were going to do an episode like they were trying to do, A Day in the Life, they should have made it the most mundane episode possible and just focused a lot more on just character. You know, the chief gets up every morning and this is what he does. And he goes here and he's dealing with something stupid and it's just, and then Apollo is like doing some paperwork and he's just really bored and he's just like, oh my gosh. He like
getting drunk at Joe's bar at the end of the day.
Exactly. And maybe that's how it is. They're telling five different stories that's just almost kind of mundane and kind of like, oh my gosh. Because, you know, we see all the exciting stuff with the, launch attack Vipers and all stuff. We don't see like all the paperwork Adama does afterwards or all the meetings that Laura Rosalyn has to go to. Maybe it's like they show all these things and the meetings are boring as hell. And the paperwork is boring. But then at the end, they all meet up at Joe's bar and get shit-faced.
All along the Watchtower plays in the background.
Exactly.
Oh, wait, a little too early for that? I don't know. They do play the song previously in the show, but this is in Crossroads Part 1, I believe, is the first time any of the characters are actually like hearing it,
yeah.
Maybe they're hearing it when it's playing in Joe's bar, but they're just the only ones. Like Anders, I think, is like, what's that song? And everybody's like, what? It's just a song.
It was Ty first, because he was on the radio going,
ksh. Yeah.
And that's when Anders looks like at a distance and he's like, wait, you almost had it. That was when it started, when they started hearing it.
You're right. Like, of course, an episode like that wouldn't have really like flown. Let's be real. And to be fair, I would say that the episode where Deanna Beers appears and is doing the like everybody, that's probably closest to an actual true day in the life episode.
And the boxing more so episode than this. Too.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's just an odd title. I wonder if it wasn't supposed to be that in the beginning. We're at the conclusion of season 3, so like I think we should close out with how we're feeling so far about where the series has gone and where, you know, when we first viewed it and didn't know it was going to happen next, where we thought it was going to go after this. Because I mean, listen, season 3 ended on a real strong note there, like you said earlier. So
It was super strong. Where it went from there, where I thought it was going to go, I had no idea. I just knew that everything was going to be chaos. And I'm just like, dude, everything is going to be crazy. Now, where it was there towards the end, I didn't really expect the final four to be who they were. I really didn't. I was like, no, it's got to be this person. But it wasn't. And when they just showed them, it wasn't like a disappointment, but it was kind of like a, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Or at least for a couple of them anyway.
For a couple of them.
Why isn't Hot Dog here?
I was like, okay, so if you're here and you're here and you're here, that means the last one is Hot Dog. Come on, Hot Dog.
Of course, like as soon as the first of them, I can't remember which one walks into the room like absolute first, but as soon as the first one of them walks into the room and you realize like, okay, who are the other three who are hearing that song for the past two episodes? Like, obviously, I mean, even before that, you knew something was up with
you knew four. Something was up because they were saying the lyrics too and they were the only four doing it, and it was like, okay, there's something going on here. But at this point, really, I wasn't even 100% sure that had to do with like a Cylon thing. There was all these like prophecy things and all these things going on, and it was just like, maybe this is some kind of weird thing, you know, like I don't know. So but I didn't really think of it to be a Cylon thing at first, but
I agree.
Then it turned out being a Cylon. I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting, you know, that you picked these four. Two of them make sense, the other two are just, they just got here, but okay.
Yeah, we can't say they don't even go here because they totally do, but you know, they're like that new student that pops in halfway through 10th grade or something, and
yeah, exactly. And they get the award
for
something. You
missed all of freshman year. Where get the award, and you get a Cylon,
You get a Cylon. Hot Dog's like, I've been here since season two, man. And I don't get to be a Cylon. You know, I'm Edward James Olmos' son, for Christ's sake, you know?
I always forget that that actor is his son. You know, you can't really see it. I don't really see it, but I've also never, I don't know if I've ever seen them like standing next to each other, honestly.
No, yeah.
Hot Dog in the show isn't important enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Hanging out with a doll.
Hanging out with his dad, you know? It's like, ah. You're just an extra on this set. Get over there. You
know? Yeah, he's like a, I don't know. He's probably not quite even a tertiary character, but we see enough of him that it would have been funny to have just some random character that's been around for a long time, but we don't see all that much. Yeah, they just pop in and out, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, guess what? You get a big role next season. Hot Dog.
Hot Dog. You know, but I think that's what Battlestar has done so fucking good, though, right? Is that they always have these weird side characters that you think nothing of, and then they wind up becoming, like, the collaborator who gets killed first. I think he was all the way back in the miniseries, and he was just, like, a deckhand, just some rando, and it's like, wow, his story arc went all the way over here. I was like, you know, and he became an important part of that particular arc, right? And I was like, see, that's really awesome, and that's why we remember these people, you know, like Racetrack and all these things, that they were just side characters. They were, like, nobodies. They've always done good with that. That's the show I would have wanted to be an extra on, because maybe one day I can be a hot dog, you know?
Oh my God, Lines Out of Context. That's a show I don't want to be an extra on, because one day maybe I can be a hot dog.
I can be a hot
dog. Oh man. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to figuring out how to split up season four and talk about it, because there's a lot going on in season four.
To unpack there.
And the last season.
Till we get to the plan.
Yeah, that just popped up on Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's been there for a while, but...
No, it was on there, I think, because they didn't have Blood and Chrome and Razor, the two things that you would want to watch on Amazon. No. They put the plan on there.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that they didn't have Razor. Dean had to, like, dig out his DVDs.
That's what I had to do. I had to dig it out. I was like, dude, I know I got it here somewhere.
All right. Well, as we close out the episode, we just want to thank you for joining us for our 9th Media That Made Us episode on the Crossroads arc of Battlestar Galactica Season 3. We will be back soon to begin our discussions of BSG Season 4. In the meantime, please don't forget to like, subscribe, or rate us 5 stars wherever you're watching or listening. And as always, please also consider supporting us by backing our Patreon at patreon.com/geeksaga_entertainment.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Saga podcast. If you like what you heard, please check out other Geek Saga entertainment endeavors, including the Sagas and Sass webcast and podcast, and Ice and Fire Con.